talk today is some old stories with a new flavor. Okay? You take foundational experiments, typically what we now call classical foundational experiments, and you add quantum control. And that what happens. Okay. Now, I'll start from a quick history. We'll talk about complementarity and the complementary principle and delayed choice experiments. Then I'll switch attack and we'll go to a brief description of hidden variables, like hidden variables 101. Now, I'm not a believer in hidden variables in any shape or form, but we discovered them to be very useful. Particularly, I see that one of the problems when you deal with quantum foundations is that words are treacherous. And people often change meaning of the words and their definitions through the paper. And then at the end of the paper, it might mean something else than at the beginning. And it's really hard to grasp and grapple with that. Once you use probability distribution, and that's what I'm using hidden variables for, a way of an ambiguously formulated probability distribution, you cannot avoid the consequences. Your words are translated into math, and you have to stick to it to the bitter end. So that's why food! That's why I think hidden variables are useful, and I'll try to convince you. All right, so after all those introductions, I'll present some elements of quantum control and its applications. Obviously, if we begin to be quantum, it's reasonable to try to be also entangled, and that's the next step. Discuss entangled control in delayed choice experiments. And finally, I would like to show at least one example when classically reasonable assumptions put together are inconsistent. Not contradicting quantum mechanics, but just inconsistent as a bunch of requirements. You overconstrain your system, and we'll see that in those circumstances, you really cannot be a little bit non-classical. You either stick to classical mechanics or you're forced to go to quantum all the way. All right. So the references. Since delayed choice experiments are going through some sort of renaissance now, actually a paper which is supposed to appear in Reviews of Modern Physics, and I think it will be there soon, by Xiaosong Ma, Koffler, and Anton Zeilinger, which is very nice, readable introduction to the story and covers a lot of interesting historic topics, is a very good general reference. But mostly I'll be talking about the work that I've done with Rado Iannicciu, once when he was still at Macquarie, then when he was at IQC, and now he's in Romania, with Rob Mann from University of Waterloo, and Thomas Genevieve. So first story is a little bit of history about complementarity and delayed choice. Well, the story, waves versus particles, and the sort of the conflict is pretty old. We can look at photons and see them as particles or as waves. And I think the story starts, even if you try to start it in modern times, it starts at least with Gassendi, who proposed that they are particles, and Huygens, of course, for whom they were some type of waves. And then, you know, going back and forth, Newton almost finally nailed the colors to the side of particles. And Thomas Young, who admitted that they had to recover, that had to overcome a considerable admiration for Newton to think about light as waves. Then we have Poisson, tried to disprove, but figured out one of the singular features of diffraction, till by the end of 19th century, waves were firmly and well established in the electromagnetic theory. Well, till Maxwell and till Planck and Einstein came, and we turned again to the particle side. So we have this split type personality, and the partial resolution of this disorder was, of course, at only when quantum mechanics was properly formulated. So here we have a picture of de Broglie, which probably is an illustration what happens when officers have too much free time on their hands during the war. Well, last year of war had actually to do practically nothing. So he learned physics, read forbidden German journals, and proposed that every particle has also wave properties. And then we have Schrödinger with his equation. What is of interest to us is logical sequence. Starting just from this sort of vague idea that particles are waves, we go to the wave function. Wave function, formalize it as wave vector, and then, well, what we now call quantum state. And the wave property is the property of superposition. It's the fact that quantum states are actually superposition of, again, what we call now basis states. If you want to see the experimental side of the things, a proving ground for these ideas, two classical experiments. It's a double slit experiment where immediately we can ask a question, okay, so a photon went through a slit, which way it went? Or it's a Mach-Zehnder interferometer where we can test for wave or particle properties. And again, they are very much related. Question of which way, getting the answer to this question, we observe particle properties of our quantum system. If we have interference pattern, those are the wave properties. So you always can have only partial information, and that probably, it's one of the reasons for the complementarity principle, how it was formulated. Surprisingly, we actually saw photons at the level of single particles very late. Only in 1986, they were convincingly detected as single photon events. Again, in Mach-Zehnder interferometer by Alain Aspect and his group. And also, at the same experiment, in the same paper, we've got two types of statistics. If we have a Mach-Zehnder interferometer with two beam splitters, well, we just got a normal interference picture, and the only curious picture of property of this data is that this interference pattern was obtained click by click, photon by photon. So unlike what stuff written in Dirac's book, photon interferes only with itself. Here we have interference pattern which was obtained as statistical analysis of many detections of many photons. And if we have only one beam splitter, so we have just single detections which were totally insensitive to the phase shift, and then we could have interpreted them as photon taking one arm of the interferometer or another. So probably it's a good place to stop and take a working definition. We know that classical concepts don't translate easily to the quantum regime. It's non-trivial. Pick up whatever word we use in classical physics, and it might have slightly different meaning in quantum mechanics. So as an operational definition, we'll take a particles, or particle properties, if you wish. That means when we analyze statistics, we don't have any interference. We don't have any sensitivity to whatever phase shifts are possible along the arms of the interferometer. And as a result, we can ascribe to those objects a trajectory and following one of the two alternative paths. And what we describe as waves, or define as waves, is that a property is this one. We do observe interference. The pattern is statistical pattern is sensitive to the phase shifts in the middle. And well, those are our waves. So in both cases, we use statistics and analysis of the data as the definition of what was a particle and what was a wave. Now, many experiments and many debates, which I'm going to skip over and go directly to the summary, led Bohr to define his complementarity principle. Now, it's a really fuzzy and complicated concept. One of the things which I discovered to my horror, when I was reading a paper of Bohr, when he replied to Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen in Physical Review in 1935, since the paper is digitized, you can do counting very precisely. The word complementarity appears four times in that paper, but at least I wasn't able to understand what is meant by complementarity, because once it appears in a in the abstract, once in footnote, once as something that will be defined, and once as something that was defined. So as the most readable definition of complementarity, I think it is, I pick what's written by Stepp in the article about complementarity in the Compendium of Quantum Physics. We took information provided by different experimental procedures that in principle cannot, because of the physical character of the apparatus, be performed simultaneously. Those cannot be represented by any mathematically allowed quantum state of the system. And then the elements of information obtainable from those incompatible measurements are said to be complementary. So again, we have information processing as a way to define complementarity. Now, complementarity may have many interesting applications and uses. One of them, I think, wasn't intended by Bohr when he introduced the concept, because it actually can be used as an argument to mask a quantum behavior and support classical intuitions. Complementarity, in one word, is good for conspiracy theories. And the conspiracy is like that. We test, like in this Aspect apparatus, either particle or wave properties. It's done in advance by setting system in a certain way. You either have a second beam splitter or you don't. So if you really want to insist on presence of classical properties at any price, you can think that the photon could know in advance, before entering the apparatus, whether it may have been set in the wave configuration with a second beam splitter in place, or in the particle configuration with only one beam splitter, and adjust its behavior accordingly. That's exactly what delay choice experiments, first hinted by von Weizsäcker in 1941 and really formalized by Wheeler in his papers in 78 and 84, are intended. We make a choice whether to insert or not to insert the second beam splitter when the photon is already in the system. So again, using a poetic language, the photon is forced not to change its mind. Now, in the most spectacular form, which I present in sort of as taglines, was also proposed by Wheeler. He suggested to use a distant galaxy, maybe 50,000 light years away, actually billions light years away, that suffers gravitational light from which suffers gravitational lensing, say, scale of 50,000 light years from us. So we have two paths that form two arms of the interferometer. And then we detect at the level single photons coming from the distant galaxy, decide whether to insert or not to insert the beam splitter. And the decision is made billions of years after the photons started traveling. And then there is a nice cryptic phrase, which for some reason people writing popular science like it very much. In this sense, we have a strange inversion of normal order of time. By moving the mirror in or out, we have an unavoidable effect on what we have a right to say about the already past history of the photon. And there are also some other even more cryptic phrases. What we'll try to do? Yeah?
Sorry, it's a question. I mean, but in many worlds, can't you say that you have the choice to recohere or not to the many worlds, and that is, you can make whenever you want? The different branches?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, but in that particular branch, there are certain things that they can say about that history. Because again, the whole point of many worlds is that we are not observing all the branches simultaneously. And then if we give an explanation for a particular branch, we still have the same issue, I think. But again, that's what I try to avoid. Namely, discussing words, and that's why I like hidden variable theories. I discovered that I like hidden variables so much, because they allow me to formulate mathematically those intuitions and see what it gives me. All right. So what is the purpose of hidden variable theories? Like, what their goal in life? And if we strip them to bare bones, the motivation is very simple. Hidden variable theories are supposed to reproduce observation and predictions of quantum theory and maintain as many favorite classical concepts as possible. Now, by those who dislike them, probably majority of people, they can be viewed as inadequate from a point of view of actually describing how the world works, but it's still considered to be a consistent worldview. And for most part, it is so. However, at the end of my talk, I'll show an example where if you try to push in for too many classical concepts, they become mutually inconsistent. Now, given a hidden variable theory, a counter hidden variable action is to consider the setup, make a quantum mechanical prediction, make a hidden variable prediction. If they're different, hallelujah, make an experiment. Experiment shows that quantum mechanics is right, hidden variables are wrong, end of the story. Oh, no. Like in electronic warfare, where there is counter-electronic warfare and counter-counter-electronic warfare, and as far as I was told, counter-counter-counter goes up to the fifth degree, there is counter-counter-hidden variable action, and that opens at least two possibilities. You either find a loophole, or you introduce conspiratorial conspirations. Conspiratorial correlations, going back as far as needed. Now, one paper that I would like to recommend, which gives, again, formal description of three basic axioms of hidden variables and derives all of the rest from them and also establish what is coexisting with quantum mechanics, what is not, is given by a paper of Brandenburger and Yanofsky. If I'm not mistaken, one of the authors is a statistician and one is a professor of actuarial studies. It's probably the most boring paper I read in past 10 years or so. By the time you end the middle of this paper, you already forget what's in the beginning. But that's the only thing that kept me sane during work on this project. Every time I wasn't sure what I am actually assuming, I just had to go to this paper and look it up. So if you're trying to play with foundations and you're involved with hidden variables, my wholehearted recommendation, read this paper and study it well. It collects many results which are scattered between different papers. The authors also took care to harmonize the notation and the terminology and explain that if the author A calls it A and author B calls it B, this is the same thing. And what implies what? So it's extremely boring to read, but extremely useful. And so basically, hidden variable theories in most standard form come in three components. So it was setting notation, capital letters as measurements, different setting of the same apparatus, for example, A and A prime, and their outcomes are labeled as A, A prime, B, B prime, and so on. So one component that we want to introduce is determinism. It means that once hidden variables are known, there is no residual randomness, and everything is certain. It comes in several flavors. It can be strong determinism, it can be weak determinism, where it's not an individual test, but the whole assembly of tests. Only then it becomes predictable and still weaker forms. Have parameter independence, which also comes in several flavors. The outcome of any measurement depends only on the hidden variables and on the setup of this particular measurement. Again, expressed as conditional probability. And hidden variable or lambda independence. So determination of the hidden variable is independent of the choice of the measurement. That's also important and critical point. And there are known results about how many of those assumptions you can put together and still reproduce results of quantum mechanics. So using a beautiful thing is that locality, contextuality, all the stuff that relates to Bell inequalities, I mean, you don't have to assume anything else. Locality, contextuality are derived concepts. So our use of hidden variable theories will be very similar, but not quite. We'll use them to formalize the basic reason why we assert wave-particle duality, then it will formalize how we can detect it first and decide what was detected later. We'll address a question if the space-like separation is really necessary for those experiments, and what if controlling devices are quantum. All this can be answered in a usable and unambiguous form with the use of hidden variables. So let's set up a conspiracy theory and fake the famous moon jump. So what we do in the simplest possible setting, we introduce a hidden variable, which is binary, which does we objectify the property of being a particle, being a wave, and see what happens. So we have a binary hidden variable, which takes two values, p and w, and these values set, say, before the photon enters our interferometer. Our first task, and that's the adequacy criterion of hidden variable models, is to produce a probability distribution that reproduces the quantum data. At this level, I don't care what are the deep origins and how we get it. The first task is just to get it and see that we can do it. So the experimental data, and again, I'm working on the assumption that quantum predictions are confirmed by the experiment. We obtain it by summing over hidden variables. And as a useful analytical device, we split it into two parts. Predictions for A and B given hidden variable for strongly deterministic theory, actually, also weakly deterministic theory. It's a bunch of zeros and ones depending on the value of lambda. And initial condition unknown to us prior probability distribution of the hidden variable. All right, now let's define objectivity. It's not a very good term. It was suggested by the referees. We stuck to it, and then several other people started to use it. Probably definiteness is better. And one of the comments that I've got on Facebook, actually, by a philosopher, was actually very useful and gave a formal definition of what we call by objectivity, but by now it's too late to change the term, so let's stick to it. So photons is the particles or waves, and by the wave, in the open interferometer, which is defined in statistics, and particle in closed interferometer, a wave in closed interferometer, particle in the open interferometer, they are characterized by those statistical distributions, and giving more power to hidden variables than actually reasonable. We don't care about what happens in other cases. So what is particle? What is a particle in open interferometer? I don't know, and I don't care. It's not observable. So whatever gives me the right result will be accepted, however ridiculous it is. And the same, what is a wave in open interferometer? So it's don't ask, don't tell policy. Now let's look at the logic. In classical delay choice experiment, the one which proposed by Willa, causal, again, we do the same decomposition, and then we can have several possibilities for relationship between hidden variable and the setup of the measurement. One of them is the strictly causal one. Open interferometer, we have a particle. Closed interferometer, we have a wave, and that's it. This is exactly the target of the delay choice experiment that break the causal link. And in this case, if you want to eliminate hidden variable theories, or at least push them to the level of insanity that you either need really prior correlations going all the way back to the Big Bang, or you have superluminal propagation, if you are not willing to accept that, a classical delay choice experiment with a space-like separation kills this. Oops. So just the same thing, just written slightly nicer. Another option is sort of a stochastic case where probability of lambda just is something which is unrelated to what are the settings of the controlling device. Well, in this case, if we just solve the equations, the only way to conform, to be adequate, to get the same predictions as quantum mechanics gives, is to introduce wave-particle duality through a backdoor. What I mean is that if we look at the conditional probability distribution, outputs of our interferometer, given the state of the controlling device, meaning whether we inserted the second beam splitter or we didn't, the result is totally independent of the hidden variable. So in this case, hidden variable theory becomes simply useless. All right, so summary, yes, delay choice experiment does exactly what it claims to do. You need delay and you need space-like separation between the decision to insert the beam splitter and creation of the photon. Now, in practice, probably the most beautiful experiment was also done by the group of Alain Aspect. Now, it's 2007, progress. So the random number generator, it's not, you know, two photons coming from different galaxies, but the quantum random number generator. Conceptually, we have a qubit, put it in Z plus state, and measure it in the X basis, get 50-50 chance of is it to insert or not to insert the beam splitter. Now, classical control, space-like separation is necessary. In that particular experiment, it was enforced by having 42 meters of the delays. All right, so now let's go to the quantum control and start from just looking at the evolution. If you look at it this way, it becomes pretty obvious what to do. So we have a quantum random number generator that determines whether to insert or not to insert the second beam splitter. Okay, now all of us, or most of us, are post-quantum information generation, so many things become clearer if we write them or draw them in terms of quantum circuits. So that's a quantum circuit. We have an oscillator, prepare it, you know, in zero state, subject it to Hadamard gate, perform a measurement. Depending on the measurement outcome, apply or do not apply the second Hadamard gate. Brilliant. But if I have a gate, why to bother with classical measurement? Instead of this, I can just have controlled Hadamard. And better still, for the purposes of the proof, the initial state is not going to be like equal superposition of zeros and one, but some biased superposition of zeros and ones parameterized by alpha. And what we can do, we also can have different temporal order. Well, in plain words, we can first measure the oscillator, and then it's equivalent to the classical control. Or we even can first measure the system and only later measure the oscillator. So going to the poetic language, we first detect the system and only later figure out what was actually detected. Quantum mechanics of this story is exceedingly simple. We just run through the gates, one of the basic exercises in introductory quantum information, get a nice entangled state, which we can again poetically call this thing as a particle state, and this is a wave state, and they are not orthogonal. Counting statistics is particle statistics, and counting statistics here is wave-like statistics. Now, theoretical prediction, well, very simple, is given by this surface, and purple dots are actual experimental results obtained by Grupp and Fudan. Going to the analysis, let's see what can happen. Basically, what we have to do is, again, to write the constraints, go through the equations, and see what happens. First of all, we have more unknowns than the equations. It gives us a lot of freedom. So we can find a lot of function p that satisfy the constraints. All of those functions, however, have one very serious problem. When at the end we look at the conditional probabilities for having a particular outcome on our detector, depending on whether the system is open or not, they all are independent of the hidden variable. So generic solutions give you, again, wave-particle duality introduced through a backdoor. So they defeat the very purpose of building this particular hidden variable theory. What we can do, we can look at a very particular solution, which at first sight makes system over-constrained, but nevertheless leads to unique solution. It's fine, but in the end it implies a higher level of conspiracy. Probability of hidden variable lambda is determined now not by the outcome of the measurement on the say, ancilla, but on probabilities of those outcomes. So basically by setting alpha. Okay, so we've got it. Obviously, you can still allow conspiratorial correlations because setting alpha of, you know, on the ancilla was done in the past. It can influence the laser that produces the photon that influences the hidden variable. You can continue the chain all the way to the Big Bang. Nevertheless, we can come up with a nice tagline. So complementary phenomena are observed in single experimental setup. You don't need different experimental setups. You just have to put quantum component or controlling component of your system in a superposition. And then, again, going to Poitras, instead of complementarity of experimental setups, we have complementarity of the experimental data. Obviously, there is no inversion of the normal order of time, even if we can detect the system first and figure out what the detector was doing later. Only after we interpret the data, then we correlate the results for photon and for the ancilla. Then, and only then, is a particle-like or wave-like behavior emerges. So no reversal of history, it's just behavior is in the eye of the observer. Well, since we're able to dispense with space-like separation, or at least we turn necessity to virtue, different experimental systems can be used to illustrate it. The effect can be seen just with normal quantum optical experiments, like standard quantum optical implementation published by done by Tang and collaborators, or we can use exotic systems. No space-like separation. We can do it with NMR, and that by, done by the group at CBPF at Rio. So we have hydrogen nucleus and carbon nucleus, so no photons at all, and we just run a simulation. The first block represents initial state preparation, second block the gates, and the third block is strong measurement on the hydrogen atom. And not surprisingly, quantum mechanical predictions are vindicated, which is not so much in question. Point is that we can interpret them exactly the way I claimed before. Again, no space-like separation. You can do the Delay-Choice experiment on the chip. Now, that was done by a group of Jeremy O'Brien in Bristol with the chip design to a very large extent done by Radu. And now let things evolve a little bit more. We can have entangled control. So to make things even weirder, instead of the ancilla, we have an EPR pair. Maybe we'll bias it a little bit and see what happens. So it's really impossible to talk about settings of our experimental system, because it's not only not defined, it's sort of entangled with something else. The experiment along those lines was actually done by in France, where two polarization entangled photons used to simulate tripartite entanglement, and space-like separation in this case was necessary. But we can take it seriously, and again, the point is not to make quantum mechanical predictions, because they are very simple in this case. The point is to understand whether we can write a reasonable hidden variable theory, and then whether we can dismiss this reasonable theory based on our experimental findings. So let's again look at the assumptions. Again, we assume wave particle objectivity. We assume determinism. And however, we introduce a new feature. That's the one we will need a space-like separation for. That's a local independence. So hidden variable actually split into two parts, lambda 1 and lambda 2. Lambda 1 is the system. Lambda 2 is the Ancilla pair. They are prepared independently, and then their probability distributions, their prior probability distributions, are independent. So that was named by Ignacio Sirac and his collaborators as local independence. So let's see. So determinism, we have our space of hidden variables. Every point in hidden variable space tells us something definite about the outcomes. But the only problem, we don't know where we are. Now, we impose objectivity. That means part of this domain leads to our photon being a particle, and part of this domain leads to our photon being a wave. And again, we impose independence, and we'll see how to exploit this construction. So let's look at the logical sequence. The actual analysis is pretty boring because you have to solve all kinds of annoying systems of linear equations, but the outline is pretty transparent. So first of all, you have to do just basic exercise in quantum mechanics. You get your quantum probability distribution for outcomes A, B, and C, and whatever marginal distributions will be necessary. And then we begin to try to build, or actually try to crack, our hidden variable theory. So at the first stage, we look at the probability of having different outcomes A, B, and C, and the property lambda. We don't specify how those probabilities arise from the underlying hidden variables. We just check what are constraints on those probabilities and what we can learn from those constraints. Again, similarly to the previous cases, the system appears to be under-constrained, but a general solution gives us totally useless hidden variable theory, introduces wave-particle duality through a backdoor. Again, for general solutions, nothing actually depends on lambda, so it's totally useless. If we want a meaningful hidden variable theory, we come up with an unpleasant correlation. Now, probability of being a particle or a wave is given by the degree of entanglement of our entangled ancilla. So if the degree of entanglement of eta between 0 and 1, that's what determines probability distribution. All right. Final step is we decompose our domain of hidden variables, first of all, according to the outcomes. Test on the particle C will be given us either 0 or 1, and we remember the local independence. That means we have a splitting. The photon, which may be either particle or wave, is tensored with the block of B and C, which split into C equals 0 and C equals 1. What happens next is just, again, about one page of boring equation crunching. Which ends up with this conclusion. Yes, solution exists, but it exists only if cosine squared of alpha, the offset parameter, is 0. So in general case, you just cannot build such a probability distribution. That's very nice. It's sort of interesting logical result. What does it give us experimentally? So if we try to ignore those constraints, and we ignore adequacy, and see what will be hidden variable prediction as different from quantum prediction, assuming all the rest of the properties, we can do it. So the semi-practical scheme. Now, it's not done in the lab, but Thomas thinks that it's doable. It involves two lasers to create a pair and to create our photon, and quite an interesting optical arrangement. If we look at the predictions, then depending on whether outcome of the measurement of particle C gives us either 0 or 1, statistics of the experiment for the photon, again, function of alpha, function of eta, are given by two of those surfaces. However, if we work in hidden variable model, there is no distinction between the outcomes correlated with C equals 0 and outcomes correlated with C equals 1. So we just have a flat surface, or for this particular case, eta 1 half, have just a straight line in the middle. So we do have experimental differences between a theory which tries to impose three reasonable classical constraints and quantum mechanics. Well, again, I don't think it's very surprising. It's just a slightly different arrangement of logical assumptions. And it's sort of simpler than Bell-type inequalities. It requires different type of independence of hidden variables, not on some settings, but between two parts of the system. And also involves a more questionable assumption of wave-particle objectivity, which probably people are ready to discard as the first sign of trouble. And my final topic, I'd like to say spend a few minutes on talking about how to apply these results purely to an analysis of purely classical assumptions. So don't blame quantum mechanics for your troubles. Classical concepts can be not very consistent. So let's look at the abstraction of this say delayed choice experiments or any other experiment. So this is why I have all those big blobs. I'm not going to specify what's going on there. What we have a classical system. We have a system, and we have a controlling device. I represent them as wires, but I don't imply any quantum relation whatsoever. What is important that depending on how we set up our device, we have two types of statistics. Again, in a clear analogy with what was done before, I call it P statistics and W statistics. They are analogs of particle statistics and wave statistics for our experiment. What we want to do is to promote these two types of statistics to an objective property of the system. Unlike previous work, actually almost all work in hidden variable theory, where you have quantum prediction that you confront with hidden variable prediction, here we'll look for something else. We set up all the list of our classical properties that we wish to conserve, and then ask if it's possible at all to get a probability distribution that's called empirical probability distribution A and B, which results from a prediction of some sort of hidden variable theory over some unspecified hidden variable lambda, that we can get marginal distributions like this. And the theory doesn't have to be correct theory, it doesn't have to be quantum mechanics. Let's see if we can get something, anything that is consistent with three classical assumptions. So while adequacy is typically numbered as a property of hidden variable theory, here we ask something else. I'm ready to accept any probability distribution E, provided I can satisfy other constraints. So let's see what happens. Okay. So our three assumptions, again, the first one is objectivity. We want it to be definitely particle, or definitely P, or definitely W. And we don't care what happens in other settings. We want our theory to be deterministic, and we take even a weak flavor of determinism. So knowing hidden variable gives us predictions with certainty. Now, we also know that while probability distribution of hidden variables should be independent on the settings of the measuring apparatus, we're allowed boundaries of the regions in the domain of hidden variables to be dependent on the settings of the apparatus. It's allowed. So basically, we try to allow as much as possible. And our third requirement is independence. So boundaries may depend. Probability distribution of hidden variable is independent of this setting alpha. So we do impose lambda independence in a strict way. Then, okay, three conditions: objectivity, determinism, and lambda independence. And then, again, we go through the steps of the analysis. We find, again, a unique non-trivial solution to the three assumptions, ignoring how it arises from lambda. The solution exists, but introduces a strong correlation between the outcome B and probability distribution of hidden variables. Can be written in a unique way. This unique way, you can do either long and somewhat complicated analysis of how boundaries of different regions shift if you change parameters and you get something which is inconsistent, or just you do have a single observation. On one hand, probability distribution in this model of WOP property by assumption is independent of the external parameters. In practice, it's function of this external parameter. So we have a contradiction. And that means we cannot come up with single probability distribution, whatever its nature, that will conform to the three axioms that we put forward: objectivity, determinism, and lambda independence. And it happens without any involvement of quantum theory, which has over-constrained our slightly modified classical mechanics. We just wanted it to do too much. Unlike normal classical physics, where we have either particles or waves, here we say that under different circumstances, the system shows these properties or those properties. And if we objectify those properties, trying to do it as classical as we used to, no. You know, I have to quote Lenin in this context, surprisingly. Once he said that it's arguing about negotiations, actually. He said that it's impossible to be a little bit pregnant. In our modern language, it's binary. So it's impossible to be a little bit quantum, at least in this case. If you admit a little bit, you have to go all the way. And the last, there were 30 seconds, I'd just like to mention a few other possible uses of quantum control that we're trying to explore. One is quantum control in bell-type inequalities, where instead of random generators that select directions in which we measure, replace them by quantum controlling devices. Another one is actually a quantum control version of von Weizsäcker experiment in analysis of Heisenberg microscope, proposed that we can either measure momentum or position of particle by putting a photographic plate in the focal plane of the microscope or in the image plane of the microscope. In this case, we would like to make this decision quantum mechanically, again, and see what happens. So as a quick summary, I hope that I convinced you that quantum variables are useful. And quantum control has some practical and conceptual benefit. Entanglement control is fun. And, well, don't always blame quantum mechanics for classical inconsistencies. They might happen by themselves. Well, maybe more stuff will be coming. I have to thank many people with whom I discussed different aspects of this problem. And, well, we'll see what happens next. Thank you. Yeah?
So you didn't mention the Corey-Bohm model, which is a hidden variable model, but which is capable of reproducing, say, the delayed choice experiment in sort of in a way that doesn't require any backwards in time causal inference.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but what we did, we didn't look even how those probabilities arise, in what form they arise from the model. So I think our analysis is model independent. We got to level of contradictions before actually investigating what is the mechanism of generating those probabilities from hidden variables.
So, I mean, in the deployed Bell model, you have both a wave and a particle.
Yes, yes.
But it's described by hidden variables, so it's not lacking in objectivity.
Oh, no. But yeah, for a given definition of what we call particle, and that means statistics, in statistical analysis, it shows up as insensitivity to the phase shift. And the wave, in statistical analysis, it shows as perfect interference pattern. Then our result is model independent. That's why I insisted on sticking probability distribution to every definition. If you slightly modify what we mean by particle in the discussion with Roger, then yes, you can do things differently. Yeah?
So I have a related question, I guess. Why would anybody in their right mind believe in wave-particle objectivity in the first place? I mean, surely all we really care about is whether we can account for the experiment by saying that there are things that go, that travel locally down each path or not.
So why anybody in the right mind will believe it? Oh, you're hitting on a very good point. For us, it's totally inconceivable. I mean, you see, for me, it was even very hard to understand why anybody had problems with entanglement and what EPR didn't like about it. It was just a sort of fun way of looking at things. It was more like a game. And then we looked, serious people do experiments on the late choice experiment like in 2007. So, okay, let's see what can we do. And then, if you still want to do the experiment, our argument shows that you can do it on a chip. It's cool. That was more to test what happens if you introduce quantum control in foundational experiment. The big game is if we can do something about more interesting experiments. I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. So that's the concept. And then the second one, once we develop the machinery, let's see if really a list of classical requirements is consistent with itself. Because the typical paradigm is, you build hidden variable model, you confront it with quantum mechanics, and then either you have the same predictions and then it's boring, or you have different predictions, and then one side should explain it away and the other side explains it the other way.
Arguably the Cauchy Speicher theorem already doesn't really care about the quantum mechanical predictions.
It depends on various. Again, it's a very specific setting.
So it's wave-particle.
I'm not sure that Cauchy-Speicher really does it. So then we can build up a simple system. Three reasonable classical assumptions. Obviously, it's clear which one we should discard first, because we know that determinism and lambda independence are consistent with quantum mechanics. But it was just, again, a simple system. No quantum mechanics, three reasonable assumptions, just one teensy step towards the outside classical, standard classical domain, and you're already in contradiction, or you have to go all the way to quantum mechanics, which I think, in your recent review paper, you would rather like.
I don't know if I'd like it.
Okay, but that's something that we have to talk about. All right, I guess then that's it.